You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Indian Railways, the eternal lifeline of Indians with lesser privilege. The purveyor of pain and hope during the partition and the muse of Khushwant Singh's train to Pakistan. The setting for a dramatic episode in Paul Scott's Jewel in the Crown. The instrument that helped Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi to reacquaint himself with the heart and soul of India on his return from South Africa. The setting for romantic songs in many films of director Nasir Hussain and most memorably, Shakti Samanta's Aradhana. Mere sapno ki rani kab aayegi tu? And in the current scenario, an unkempt giant that has not fully woken up to its own potential. My name is Rakesh, and on Digging Deeper today with Money Control, we dive deep into the question, how do you solve a puzzle like the Indian Railways? This is Digging Deeper. You're listening to Money Control.
The Deep Dive podcast series. Are we ready for the bullet train? A closer look at the juggernaut, that is Indian Railways.
I say puzzle because beyond the aspirations of a 2022 fully operational bullet train lie realities like the Amritsar train tragedy on Dussehra this year, routine train accidents, inadequate and ill-maintained infrastructure that results in the crashing of overbridges and causes tragedies like the collapse of Elphinstone Railway Station's foot overbridge and the ensuing stampede in Mumbai last year. The line between development and inclusion is also a rather fine one. At the time of us putting together this podcast, the Indian Express reported that two farmers from Palghar have moved the Bombay High Court contesting the Maharashtra government's power to acquire land for the construction of the Mumbai-Ahmedabad bullet train corridor and challenged the constitutionality of the right to fair compensation and transparency in Land Acquisition, Rehabilitation and Resettlement Act, Maharashtra Amendment of 2018. In a country like India, where land rights have been a contentious issue for a while, a straightforward development model cannot be pushed through without delving into the human cost incurred. And that is what we first talk about. As Indian Express has reported, farmers Sadanand Ravte and Nathu Pathare have stated in their petition, filed through Senior Counsel Mihir Desai and lawyer Mihir Joshi, that they moved the High Court after they learned that their land is proposed to be acquired by the state government for the bullet train project. The negotiations for acquisition of their land are currently underway. Quoting from there, Ravte and Pathare have not only challenged the constitutionality of the right to fair compensation, but also the exercise of powers by the Maharashtra government under the Right to Fair Compensation and Transparency in Land Acquisition, Rehabilitation and Resettlement Act of 2013 in connection with the proposed acquisition. They have contended that since the 1.08 lakh crore high-speed rail project stretches over two states, under that particular act, a central legislation, the appropriate government to undertake the land acquisition would be the centre and not the Maharashtra government. The petition, according to The Express, says that the amendment as well as the actions of the state in seeking to undertake acquisition of the petitioner's land for the project are violative of the petitioner's rights and contrary to the scheme, intent as well as the purpose of the central act. Ravte owns 1 hectare of land and Pathare owns 0.81 hectares of land at Khaniwade village in Palghar. They cultivate rice on their plots and their earnings from the produce are their sole source of income. In a hurry to move ahead with its plans, the state government has already designated the bullet train project as being one which is in public interest. The Indian Express cites the petition again, and I quote from there, "It is already exercising powers of the appropriate government under the Central Act, albeit without jurisdiction, and in that vein is likely to exempt the acquisitions under the bullet train project from the beneficial provisions under the Central Act, depriving the petitioners of any effective compensation and other mandatory benefits." Unquote. The key phrase here, though, is sustainable development. The petition goes on to say that Section 10A, inserted by the Maharashtra Amendment of 2018, allows exclusion of projects inter alia from being subjected to social impact assessment, which is, of course, contrary to the principle of sustainable development, which is an international obligation of the Union of India and cannot be negated by way of an amendment of the present nature. The petitioners are also seeking direction that pending the hearing and final disposal of the petition, the respondents shall not take any coercive steps for acquisition of land for implementation of the project. Shashi Sonavane, Palghar-based activist, is quoted by The Express and says in a rather poignant statement, and I quote, "This land is livelihood for Ravte and Pathare. Monetary compensation will definitely not suffice. If they are unable to earn by other jobs, they can at least eat this rice to survive." Unquote. So while our global aspirations must consider our local constraints, the much-touted bullet train project seems to have hit more snags, with only a 48-kilometer track slated to be operational by the 15th of August 2022. Multiple news sources have also reported that Indian Railways is unlikely to launch the bullet train project along the entire 508-kilometer long line by 2022. The Wire reported that the National Transporter has now acknowledged implementation delays on the ground and is working instead towards making sure that the section between Surat and Bilmora will be operational by 2022. As is obvious by now, a serious conflict of interest has erupted around the issue of land acquisition, with firm opposition being offered from farmers in various states. Godrej and Boyce Manufacturing Company Limited had also contested the acquisition of its prime 39,547 square meter property in Vikhroli for the Mumbai-Ahmedabad bullet train project in May. The reason we are starting off with the bullet train project as a case study about the Indian Railways at large is because the gap between ideation and implementation certainly needs to be highlighted. In August this year, serious environmental concerns were also raised over the bullet train project, as about 80,000 trees in reserved forests and mangroves would be cut down to make way for the high-speed corridor. Civil society groups termed this a clear climate negative action on the part of the government and, as The Wire reported, questioned its economic viability as well in the view of interest rate for the heavy loan repayment of the project. Organizations like the Bhumi Adhikar Andolan, Gujarat Khedut Samaj, Kashtakari Sangathan, Maharashtra Rajya Kisan Sabha, National Alliance of People's Movements, that is NAPM, and Paryavaran Suraksha Samiti have persistently protested the bullet train project in different parts of Gujarat, Maharashtra and elsewhere on the grounds of feasibility, project cost, implementation plan, financing options and, most importantly, economic and environmental common sense. Questions have been raised about the construction of supporting pillars that are likely to puncture some of the aquifers, leading to the loss and contamination of groundwater. Add to that, as The Wire reported, lost biodiversity, pollution and climate-threatening carbon dioxide emissions as a result of energy-intensive construction practices. The bullet train, in the end, won't be expensive just in terms of the massive loan incurred. The expenses are so much more than that. As The Wire went on to report, on the loan front, though Japan is lending 88,000 crore rupees at the interest rate of 0.1% and the payback period is 50 years, with a moratorium of 15 years, the major concern is not about the interest, but the relative strength of currencies, the Japanese yen and the Indian rupee. As a much higher inflation economy than Japan, the Indian rupee is continuously becoming cheaper against the Japanese yen. It is possible that in the 50-year loan repayment period, the 88,000 crore rupee loan would become three times more than the original amount, thereby putting a huge burden on the Indian economy. Unquote. So with this bullet train project, let's ask ourselves the most important question. Who is going to use it? The most important question, therefore, that needs to be asked is if this template of development is planning to serve the current base of budget-conscious consumers who obviously cannot afford air travel, or is it hoping to lure the rich away from air travel to train travel? Who will travel in the bullet train if it becomes functional when it does? An IIM Ahmedabad study has said that 100 daily trips at full occupancy would be required at a fare of 5,000 rupees between Ahmedabad and Mumbai to make the bullet train financially viable, and it will adversely affect agriculture, horticulture and forest cover. Balance, balance. Reports have quoted senior railway minister officials who say that land acquisition will take place with consent only. But the question that should have been answered right at the onset was just whom does Indian Railways in general and this project in particular serve? And if the investment of time, effort and resources could not have been better utilized in improving the current infrastructure. Which brings us to Indian Railways in general and how there are many, many miles to go before it can truly serve its most loyal passengers well. As Money Control reported in 2017, India's railway sector has often been in the news and usually for the wrong reasons. Be it trains derailing or cases of food poisoning in the newly launched Tejas Express, the one to suffer is the passenger without an option to switch to other modes of transport. The nation's railroad infrastructure, according to the World Economic Forum Global Competitiveness Index, holds the 28th rank out of 101 countries. On its own, not bad, but there's much to be done. India, being a country which is highly dependent on the railways, is nowhere close to the top countries with the best railway infrastructure. The WEF, that is the World Economic Forum Global Competitiveness Index, is a comparison of more than 100 countries. The countries are scored out of 10. If a country has a score above 6, then the country is said to be developed. quoting from there, China ranks 12th in the rail infrastructure ranking with a score of 5.3 out of 10. And on the other hand, India's lifeline sector scores 4.4 out of 10, indicating that there is a lot of bucking up to do. Among the liabilities in the sector, said the report, are poor food quality, superfast trains frequently delayed, and the absence of an organized disaster management team. After a cabinet reshuffle, former Power Minister Piyush Goyal took charge of the Railway Ministry and proposed many reforms for the sector, like electric locomotive trains instead of diesel and a monthly expense of 1,000 crore rupees to renew tracks in order to avoid derailments. Goyal has been pushing to build electric locomotives for railways. Goyal has been pushing to build electric locomotives for railways as well and claims that over 16,000 crore rupees of expenditure can be saved. Goyal said that the sector has tied up with the Life Insurance Corporation of India for funding. The good old white knight of the country, Life Insurance Corporation. Talks have been on also with General Electric to set up a diesel locomotive factory in Bihar and an electric locomotives factory. These plans, though, need to be reviewed in the context of adequate electricity supply, because in that area, on the World Economic Forum report, India holds only the 80th, that is 80, position out of 137 countries. Are we making proper blueprints? As we've discussed so far, every grand scheme needs to take into consideration ground realities and be clearly cognizant of geographical, social, environmental, economic, and practical frameworks. But as we've been seeing, there has been a lot of talk about the big picture of an overhaul and very little attention paid to a detailed blueprint of how these plans will be taken from vision to implementation. For now, Indian Railways is busy announcing exciting plans that include using aircraft-like pressurized coaches in its trains for the Bilaspur-Manali-Leh line along the India-China border. This is the world's highest rail track, and the new coaches will ensure that the passengers do not have breathing difficulties on board. Exciting plans, ambitious plans, but blueprints. NDTV went on to report, and I quote, "At a height of 5,360 meters above the sea level, the 465-kilometer strategically significant line to be built at a cost of 83,360 crore rupees will see railways' first pressurized coaches, which are currently used only in the Qinghai-Tibet railway line in China. The line, says the report, once completed, will connect important locations between Bilaspur and Leh, like Sundarnagar, Mandi, Manali, Kelo, and other important towns like Koksar, Darcha, Upshi, Karwant towns of Himachal Pradesh and Jammu and Kashmir en route. The project will include 74 tunnels, 124 major bridges and 396 minor bridges, according to the first phase of the survey. Final location survey for the project is currently underway. India Today also has reported that the state-owned Chittaranjan Locomotive Works has given the Indian Railways its fastest ever engine. Quoting from India Today, the modified WAP-5, which is yet to have a name, is expected to travel at 200 kilometers an hour. It also comes with improved aerodynamics and has an ergonomic design, which takes care of driver comfort and safety. The first engine of the series has been sent to Ghaziabad, its probable future base. It is expected to be used to haul trains like Rajdhani Express, Gatiman Express and Shatabdi Express. It would slash the travel and turnaround time for these trains. Railways have been looking to increase the average speed of its trains. The new engine, made by Chittaranjan Locomotive Works, is a step in that direction, besides the proposed bullet train and the new T18 train. According to the same report, the engine has CCTV cameras and cockpit voice recorders, which will record communication between the members of the driving team. The recordings will remain saved for 90 days and can be analyzed in case of emergencies and accidents, which will help provide a clear picture of what happened in case of an accident. This engine would consume less electricity than its predecessor, thanks to a next-generation regenerative braking system. The new engine has been manufactured at a cost of around 13 crore rupees. However, the new design will help trains attain higher speeds. The focus on electric engines will help reduce the use of diesel and hence lessen the carbon footprint, besides slashing the huge fuel import bill. Recently, the cabinet has cleared an ambitious project for 100% electrification of the broad gauge of Indian Railways network. Unquote. Indian Railways today, as on the 29th of October, rolled out its much-awaited semi-high-speed 100 crore rupee engineless Train 18, that is T18, that has been conceived, designed and developed in a record time of about 18 months. This semi-high-speed train set consists of 16 coaches and is designed for maximum operating speed of 160 kilometers. Train 18 is slated to retire the time-worn Shatabdi and will run at 160 kilometers an hour, like I said. Made by the Integral Coach Factory, or ICF, in Chennai, it is a triumph of legacy that is as old as its latest achievement is new. The Integral Coach Factory is one of the earliest production units of independent India. It was inaugurated by the first Prime Minister of India, Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru, on the 2nd of October 1955. Later, the furnishing division was inaugurated on the 2nd of October again, 1962, and the production of fully furnished coaches steadily increased over the years. Spread over nearly 473 acres, the ICF has about 11,095 workers toiling in harsh conditions to make more than 2,000 coaches every year. Train 18's features include two driving trailer coaches with aerodynamic driver's cab, that is the nose cone, on both ends, which will enable quicker turnaround time at destinations. Every alternative coach is motorized to ensure even distribution of motive power and faster acceleration and deceleration. ZBiz went on to note, and I quote, "The train boasts better and modern passenger amenities such as onboard Wi-Fi infotainment, GPS-based passenger information system, plush interiors, diffused LED lighting, charging points beneath every seat, individual touch-based reading lights, auto sensor taps in the toilets, modern pantry and food service facilities, rotating seats to match with the direction of the train in executive class, automatic sliding doors inside the coaches, modular luggage rack with the glass bottom and concealed roller blinds, among others." I sound like a train catalog model. The train has been designed keeping in mind the difficulties disabled people face. The train has PWD friendly features like PWD friendly toilets, that is people with disabilities, and space for wheelchairs in the coaches. The PWD passengers, people with disabilities, can even enter the driving trailer coach using the wheelchairs. The train has been fitted with an intelligent air conditioning system that will adjust the cooling according to the climate conditions and occupancy. It has a seating capacity of over 1,100 people. The train will also have enhanced safety features, including precise brake control and automated doors control. The automated plug doors provided on the coaches will open only when the train reaches 0 kilometers an hour speed, and the train will start only after closing all the doors. According to the report, the time and energy efficient all air conditioned chair car formation is expected to replace the existing Shatabdi Express for intercity travel and considerably reduce the traveling time due to its better acceleration and deceleration. The train is likely to first replace Delhi-Bhopal Shatabdi Express after completing the trial successfully. Well, there are some forward steps taken, but there are a few backward ones as well. As the Financial Express has reported, the Union Budget of 2017 sanctioned around 17,000 crore rupees for two corridors of the quadrilateral, Delhi-Mumbai and Delhi-Howrah, but the actual work will only start after the dedicated freight corridors, that is DFCs, will become operational, expected by March 2020. Quoting from the Financial Express, the other four arms of the quadrilateral are Delhi-Chennai, Chennai-Howrah, Chennai-Mumbai and Howrah-Mumbai. More than two-thirds of the highly congested 10,000-kilometre Golden Quadrilateral network is utilised to beyond its capacity. While this network accounts for only 20% of the tracks across the country, 55% of the traffic moves on this network alone. The official said that the shutdowns required to carry out work cannot be provided till DFCs are operational. As the big strides begin to take hold of our collective imagination, Indian Railways has had to deal with basic problems like losses of 4,000 crore rupees over the last three fiscal years owing to thefts. As Business Today reported, and I quote, "On the one hand, Indian Railways has been revamping its trains and refurbishing its stations. And on the other, inventory worth 62 lakh rupees was stolen from Indian long-distance trains just between April and September 2018. While the amount may not appear significant for operations as vast as Indian Railways, the tally of items is, between April and September 2018 alone, 79,350 hand towels, 27,545 bed sheets, 21,050 pillow covers, 2,150 pillows and 2,065 blankets were stolen, amounting to about 62 lakh rupees, as mentioned by Sunil Udasi, CPRO of Central Railway. The source said that trains are now equipped with facilities such as sensor-driven taps and CCTV cameras, but they don't even last the maiden trip. After that, the Indian Railways replaces them with cheaper options." Unquote. After talking about the ambitious plans that Indian Railways has and the stupid ways in which Indians use these utilities, let us conclude about the bigger picture. It's important that development plans include those most affected by them, but it's also crucial that the consumers for whose benefit infrastructural changes are made co-create the bigger change and acquire a sense of civic responsibility. Nobody comes up looking good when uncomplimentary reports emerge, like when we learned that post the country's first high-speed, semi-luxurious train, Tejas Express's maiden run, passengers had taken away headphones, damaged LCD screens, soiled the toilets, and littered the entire train. We learned that most of the train's Jaguar fittings were stolen and had to be replaced, obviously, with cheaper ones. Dailies also report how the Mumbai Manmad Panchavati Express, that was upgraded with better facilities and fittings at the cost of 38 crore rupees, was left vandalized, leaving behind a repair bill of 9 lakh rupees. Tray tables and upholstery were damaged, armrests dislodged, curtains torn, and taps, trash cans, mirrors, and faucets stolen. Faucets, guys, faucets. Change is a two-way process, and both the vendor and the consumer must do their bit to maintain what has been created. The finger-pointing that went on after the Amritsar train tragedy that claimed 61 lives on Dussehra Day also does nobody any favours. Neither does the official data from the Indian Railways, which states that nearly 50,000 people have lost their lives between 2015 and 2017 on railway tracks after being hit by trains. NDTV reported deaths on railway tracks occur due to trespassing, violating safety and cautionary instructions, avoiding over bridges, using mobile phones and other electronic gadgets when crossing railway tracks. Officials said the railways has taken corrective measures such as regular announcements through passenger address system at stations, urging passengers to use foot over bridges, that is FOBs, awareness drives against trespassing were conducted, construction of boundary walls, warning signs were erected to prevent accidental deaths on railway tracks, etc., etc. Unauthorized trespassing on railway premises, including on tracks, is a punishable offence under Section 147 of the Railways Act of 1989. While some of these lives could be those taken by the people who were on these tracks, it is still a staggering number that 50,000 people have lost their lives between 2015 and 2017 on railway tracks. But as the Amritsar tragedy showed, when railway systems and citizen responsibility fail to do their bit collectively, lives are lost. The Indian Railways is a remarkable success story. All said and done, it is still one of the largest employers anywhere in the world and an excuse constantly used by colonialism apologists. Whenever you bring up the context of colonialism, especially with a white middle-class or upper-middle-class male, you can talk about all the atrocities of colonialism, all the ways in which India was robbed, and they always conclude their masterful argument with, what about the railways? The construction of the Indian Railways is often pointed out by these apologists for empire as one of the ways in which colonialism benefited India, ignoring, of course, the fact that many countries also built railways without having to go to the trouble of being looted by colonists. The facts are actually quite damning, and here is where I turn to Shashi Tharoor. The railways were first conceived of by the East India Company, like everything else in that firm's calculations, for its own benefit. Governor-General Lord Hardinge argued in 1843 that the railways would be beneficial to the commerce, government and military control of the country. In their very conception and construction, the railways were a scam by the colonists. British shareholders made absurd amounts of money by investing in the railways, where the government guaranteed returns double those of government stocks paid entirely from Indian and not British taxes. And more importantly, it was not built for the benefit of Indians. The railways were intended principally to transport extracted resources like coal, iron ore, cotton, all those goodies that the British got from Indian soil to ports for the British to ship home to use in their factories. The movement of people was merely incidental, except when it served colonial interests. Third-class compartments with their wooden benches and total absence of amenities were those relegated for the Indians. Indians were not even employed in the railways. The prevailing view was that the railways would have to be staffed almost exclusively by Europeans to protect investments. And that was true of signalmen and those who operated and repaired the steam trains, but the policy was extended to the absurd level that even in the early 20th century, all the key employees, from directors of the railway board to ticket collectors, were white men, whose salaries and benefits were also paid at European levels, not Indian levels, and largely repatriated back to England. The colonists were also threatened by the local automotive workshops that came up with their own engines. Their success alarmed the British, since the Indian locomotives were just as good and a whole lot cheaper than the British-made ones. In 1912, as a result of that, the British passed an Act of Parliament which made it impossible for Indian workshops to design and manufacture locomotives. Between 1854 and 1947, India imported around 14,400 locomotives from England, 3,000 from Canada, US and Germany, but made none in India. After 1912, after independence, 35 years later, the old technical knowledge was so completely lost to India that Indian Railways had to go cap in hand to the British to guide them in setting up a locomotive factory in India again. That's how much the idea of railways fell squarely under the thumb of the British. In 1600, when the East India Company was first established, Britain was producing about 1.8% of the world's GDP, and India was generating about 23%. And 27% by 1700. By 1940, by the time they were about to leave India, Britain accounted for nearly 10% of the world GDP, and India had been reduced to a poor third world country, a global poster child of poverty and famine. With much of the material that built that country, which could contribute 10% of global GDP by 1940, being carried by these very tracks on these very trains. The British left a society with 16% literacy, a life expectancy of 27, practically no domestic industry, and over 90% living below what today we would call the poverty line, goes on to note Shashi Tharoor in his Inglorious Empire. From then to now, with our own indigenous locomotive works, with the Indian Railways contributing so significantly to the employment situation here in the country, and being the lifeline of travel for those who cannot afford air travel yet, Indian Railways is a story like few other. And the responsibility of expanding it into the new world, incorporating 21st century technological capabilities, lies as much with the government as it does with us. The government needs to be cognizant of the fact that when it is trying to build new lines, it needs to be aware of the ecological and human impact of building these train lines, while us, as citizens using them, must also be cognizant of the fact that this is a service that needs to be used responsibly. Here's hoping then that you will steal no more towels and leave the faucets be. Thank you for joining us.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.